So while we're saying slichos, when we say don't forget, it's the hey of Bahab. So I have to tell you, Yikim Amidos. So Rashi in the end of Bahar, remember it's in Eretz Yisrael reading Bahar. So Rashi talks about the sequence of Bahar. The entire Parsha is ordered as one economic sequence. So what's the sequence, Rashi says? How do you get from Shemitah in the beginning of the Parsha and selling your portable items all of a sudden to becoming slaves and becoming slaves to Gentiles? It's a very, very dramatic and sharp shift in the storyline, in the halachas. Interesting that Rashi would assume that there's going to be some sequence. Sometimes we're parsha, it's like we don't sense any sequence. Vayavar Adonai apana vayikra. Adonai, Adonai, El Rachum Echadu, Derechabayim, Rafasim, Emes, Yitzirachasel, Olachim, Asiyaron, Rafasha, Vechata, Venakei, Vesalachta, Rabbaninu, Lechata, Sinu, Nechatanu. So Rashi says that the story of Parshas Behar is the pathology of greed. Is that someone that violates Shemitah, at least Rashi assumes, he's not violating Shemitah for purely theological reasons. He's not violating Shemitah. He's violating Shemitah for economic reasons. He just can't weather. Can't imagine himself losing money, suffering financially. So it leads him to violate Shemitah. Once you walk down the path of greed, then it's a very, very quick and precipitous fall. Oh, you're someone that needs a lot of money, so you're likely to sell off your items in irresponsible fashion because you want to garner cash, and you're going to sell off your land, and you're going to take higher prices than you're supposed to, and you'll be over on Onah, and you'll be so addicted to money and the pursuit of money that you may even be willing to sell yourself, and you may even so desirous that Rashi senses that Parshas Behar is not describing a destitute person who needs all the money, even though that's what the Torah describes, v'chei mochachicha. But if someone has fallen into the addictive trap of greed, so in general, averos are gereros averos. Once a person sins, the floodgates are open. You sinned, lightning didn't strike you. You woke up tomorrow having a good day. So the whole fear and trepidation of sin can sometimes become eroded by a previous sin. But when it comes to the sin of greed, it's even more of a free fall. It's even more of a spiral, a death spiral. Because greed is one of the addictive traits. Many of the traits in life, greed, anger, sexual addiction, we think about addiction in terms of substances, but traits are also addictive. When they're toxic traits, they can consume virtue and consume integrity. About 20 years ago, there was a scandal in Houston. It was an energy scandal. In the late 90s and the 80s, there was an energy boom in Houston. So a lot of companies made rich off of the discovery of oil and the tapping of oil. It's called the Enron scandal, which a lot of executives were skimming money off of the corporations. So at some point, they interviewed some of these executives who had been tossed into jail for 20, 30 years of their life because of this misappropriation of funds. So one of the interviewers asked them, I don't understand something. You had hundreds of millions of dollars. You could have lived comfortably your entire life, and you could have supported your children and your grandchildren in four generations. Like, why did you steal an extra 20 million? Now you'll end up in jail for 30 years. And the person said, well, it wasn't that I needed it, but the person, my rival, had more. And I had to keep up with the Joneses. So part of the addiction of greed is you're always looking at what other people have, as opposed to leading more of a temperate and abstinent lifestyle with what you make do with what you have. So, of course, you want to be ambitious in life. But Vayavar Adonai apana vayikra. Adonai, Adonai, El Rachom Nechanon, Erechapayim, Rav Chesed, V'yemes, Netzer Chesed, Olafim, Tzeavon Vafesha, V'chata, V'nakei, V'selachta Lavoneinu, L'chataseinu, Nechaltanu. But when you're too ambitious in acquiring funds and gathering money, and you're not able to live responsibly, so it leads to a lot of not just what you see in the parsha going through Rashi is fiscal irresponsibility. We shouldn't be selling off your property, and you shouldn't be selling yourself as a slave. And what you see in the end of the parsha, amazingly, is that because of this greedy, avaricious lifestyle of grabbing and always running after your greed, and always rather than a temperate and abstinent lifestyle, you end up reaching theological error. In the end of the parsha, the Torah describes someone that worships idols, someone that worships Avodah Zarah, and someone that bows down to Avodah Zarah, and someone that in theory violates Beis HaMikdash and violates Shabbos, 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 Shabbos. So in the end of the parsha, Rashi has one saga for how a slave
violate Shabbos. I spoke about this yesterday in the Chuk, because you look at your master and the cultural influence, you become a little bit too impressionable. But at least if you don't look at that Rashi in the end of the Parsha, here you see terrible mitos slipping into terrible theological error. And their inverse is also true. I know a lot of people that don't have yeshiva background, they never learned Torah, but they know how to live life the right way. They're temperate, they're abstinent, they're moderate, their mitos are in place, they're kind, they're humble, they're intellectually honest. And we take all those traits, slowly you move closer to a life of meaning and a life of exploration and a life of contact with Hashem. Not always, but it's, in theory, that's one entry point.
Adonai, Adonai, Arachom Mechanu, Nerechapayim, Rav Chesed, V'yemes, Natsir Chesed, Lo Alafin, Nasi Avon, Vafesha, Avichata, Avinakei, V'salachta, Lavoneinu, Lechataseinu, Nechaltanu.
So again, just to summarize, because we've been interrupted a little bit, interrupting ourselves, Baruch Hashem, just to summarize, Rashi describes Parshas Bahar as a sequence. What's the sequence between violating Shemitah and the conclusion in Bahar, where you sell yourself off as a slave to a Gentile and possibly violate Avodah Zarah based on the Christian Shabbos? So Rashi sequences the saga or the narrative of greed. The greed is addictive, and greed leads to grabbing and irresponsible financial behavior and violation of financial rules of Onah, and possibly in the end, actually serves as an entry point to theological confusion and violation of mitzvos that have nothing to do with money, because the intemperate lifestyle, once you allow addiction, so I think in today's world, sometimes I speak with educators and they say, I tell them, you know your children are addicted to sports, right? Boys are addicted to sports today, and girls are addicted to shopping sometimes. And sometimes I'll hear them say, well, I'd rather be addicted to sports than be addicted to worse elements. I'd rather be addicted to shopping than be addicted to worse elements. That's not true. Once you let addiction into your system, you're relinquishing control of your life. You're relinquishing control of your decision-making. That relinquishing of control is going to spill over to other parts of your life. So once you follow your greed, then you've opened the floodgates. And those floodgates won't just lead you into more greed and more financial violation and more stealing and more, but it will also lead you to other areas in which you can't exercise your control. And that's part of what Rashi's saying, is that the greed leads you ultimately to Avodah Zarah and violation of Beis HaMikdash. Okay, now, big question in Parshas Bahar, of course, is what's the Torah's view of slavery? How could the Torah tolerate slavery? Slavery is obviously a moral disfiguration of mankind. How could one person lord over another person? And typically the answer is the Torah is trying to slowly move people away from that culture. Ancient culture didn't have technology. They needed a massive amount of manual labor to build, to move, to travel. So unfortunately, for thousands of years, humanity was cursed by slavery. And the Torah is trying to inch us within our context as close as we can away from slavery to distance us, and it sees a world in one day which slavery will be completely abolished. Okay, so we'll stop and we'll talk about how the Torah wants us to avoid slavery.
Adonai, Adonai, Arachim Mechanu, Nerechapayim, Rav Chesed, V'yemez, Netzer Chesed, V'lachin Nesevan, V'vesha, V'chada, V'nakei, V'slachdo, V'neinu, L'chataseinu, Necheltanu.
So at least with regard to an Eved Ivri, not about an Eved Kanani, because Eved Kanani, the Torah does present it as if it's full-fledged slavery, with limitations, obviously. You can't maim the Eved, you have to support the Eved, but certainly it's closer to the ancient institution of slavery. But Eved Ivri, the Torah puts up roadblocks. You can't humiliate the person, you can't disgrace the person, you can't overwork the person, you have to be careful. So at least with other Jews, the Torah is putting roadblocks to slavery. And that all makes sense to us. Until the following Rashi. Hashem says, Ki avadayim. So you and I would think avadayim because we should see another human being as an Eved Hashem, and you should not want to impose your authority and your dictatorship over another person. What does Rashi say? Shtarayim. Shtaray kodem. My contract with them comes first. This sounds like a very petty way to describe Hashem. I got the first contract on that person. So it sounds like litigious. You want to buy an Eved Ivri, you should know he's mine. But as harsh and as coarse as it sounds, and we think Hashem would so to speak in more dignified terms, shtarayim, rather than saying about a prior contract, it is putting a roadblock. It's saying you can't own another human being. Hashem is specifically speaking in litigious terms, in financial terms, in legal terms, rather than just in spiritual terms. In spiritual terms, you say, okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu spiritually doesn't want me to abuse another human being, doesn't want me to exploit another human being. I'll find my own balance, but I'll... And Hashem is saying, no. I own human beings. You can't think about... Human beings are not given to ownership. You can't own another... Again, in this case, a Jew. You can't think about owning another Jew. Because Shtari Kodem. So Hashem is specifically creating a deterrent to the very notion that you can exercise legal ownership over. Even though it sounds strange for Hashem to speak that way, right? Let's say, I wanted to buy something you already had, you own it. I own it. Say, you know what? Maybe it's not right. You take something that's not yours. When you speak in those terms, it sounds very petty and infantile. Hashem is speaking in those terms, according to Rashi, just to create a roadblock to the very concept of ownership of another human being. Let's talk about one other Rashi. When the Torah says with an Eved Ivri, you can't overwork him and overuse him. So Rashi says, let's go back a little bit. Okay, Rashi says, Lo tir deba b'farach. You can't work him too hard. So we would think that you would gauge the difficulty and the harsh work of, and labor that you can't expose him to based on the hours, based on how heavy it is, how much exertion. Rashi says as follows. You can't make him do needless and pointless things. You can't just force him to do things just for fun, just for sport. Go over there, like in the army. Run 10 miles, run. It has to be purpose. You can't say, you know what, I'm coming back in 15 minutes. Just go plow under the tree until I come back. You can't give people busy work. Why? Because busy work may not be physically tall, may not be physically manipulative, but it's psychologically very, very, very punitive. And psychologically, because when people feel that there's some consequence and some output and some reason that they're working, then even when you're exposed to difficult conditions, you take pride in your handiwork, you take pride in your accomplishment. When you don't see that there's any output or any consequence to your behavior, it becomes psychological. Chazal tells us in Mitzrayim, Pisam and Ramses were built on swamplands, and Pyro was instructing them to build on swamplands just to demoralize them. Just they should work for days and days and days and years and years and years. What have you accomplished the last 3 years of your life? Absolutely nothing. If you accomplish something, at least there's a sense of pride. So it's true about life. You always have to have a sense of what you're working towards to motivate current motivation and investment. If you don't see any horizon, you don't see where it's landing, where it's heading, it's very hard to motivate yourself because it's psychologically very heavy. So that's why yeshiva is always important to say, today, the day of learning, where's this heading? Why am I in yeshiva? Am I just here counting the hours, punching the clock? Or am I trying to become something, Talmid Chacham and Oved Hashem, a spiritually alive Jew? And today's day, today's minutes and hours will contribute to that. That all of a sudden can make like Yaakov. And Yaakov sensed that he could marry Rachel. The second 7 years were, he already married Rachel, but when it was reviewed by Nata, it was very, very quick in his mind. It went very, very quickly. Time moves when you feel a sense of accomplishment. So three interesting Rashis. One Rashi about the free fall of greed and addiction and living an abstinent life serving as an entry point to religious lifestyles. Number two is Hashem speaks in ways that would be strange. That, oh, they're my slaves. You can't own them, because Hashem is speaking in litigious terms just to block the notion of human ownership. And then finally, Losir de Rabba Farach Rashi says, don't give anyone, certainly in Eved Ivri, busy work just to torture them psychologically. And psychological torture is sometimes more difficult than physical torture. Okay, tomorrow, Sunday, and Monday, no share. So, Mir Hashem on Tuesday. Yes.
Thank you.
If the Torah means to distance us from slavery as much as possible, then why is Eved Ivri distinguishing the Kanei, like, rather than us?
What do you mean?